Hello, I'm Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, bringing you a Floydcast number 14 for May 19, 2014. I'm up pretty early, got up at 3:30, did quite a bit of reviewing of my Floydcast material. I got just tons and tons of stuff to talk about and looking forward to it. Tried to prioritize it, tried to group it so it makes sense. Got the doggies here, already up and awake and licking themselves, and they had their morning treat, their co-sequin for their joint health. Bit of luck, they'll settle in, and I'll settle in, and we'll do a nice cast here. I wanted to start off with a little bit of trivia, a little factoid that came out in the last, looks like sometime in May. I don't have the exact date handy. It says, we've now crossed over where we have as many cell phones active as there are people on the face of the earth. 7.1 billion of each. Active cell phones. Active people. And of course, many countries are poor. They don't have cell phones. So some people have, you know, two or three or whatever. That's kind of sobering. So, there was an article. The original article was in The Guardian, which is a British publication. And the headline said, intensive mobile phone users at higher risk of brain cancers. It was based on 449 people who had gotten a glioma or a meningioma cancer. And they asked them questions. A series of 26 questions about their cell phone usage, etc. Answers were noted, report was written. Now that's a pretty good sample size. The only study ever done to measure whether people were sensitive to microwave radiation, you know, putting them in an isolated room and turning it on, turning it off, and seeing if they were sensitive, they needed over 100 and they sampled 50. So this study right away is 10 times bigger than that. So it had an original headline, which I read to you, and then Ars Technica, it's a site associated with Slashdot, featured on Slashdot. It's like a technical site. They review computers, software, cell phones. They keep you current on science stuff. You know, I even subscribed like a year ago, a year and a half ago. I subscribed to Ars Technica. Support them, felt good kind of thing. And when you subscribe, you can get their articles in a PDF format that you can save. Instead of having an article that might run across even 10 or 15 pages, often two or three. It can be in one PDF, so it's just kind of more cohesive, more handy that way. A keeper. Well, about a year ago with Ars Technica, I ran into an issue with them. They did an article on fluoride, and I posted my own opinions about it, and got attacked. And it's an interesting thing getting attacked on the internet these days. Interesting feeling there. And it's quite clear that this is the battleground. This is where those who control us must fight us. And they must win. They know it. Joe Average, like myself, you know, we don't know it. We don't know it's a battleground. We don't know that we should win. And so we just kind of give in. We go away. We're like, whoop, look at those guys, you know, or wow, kind of thing. But it so bothered me on the fluoride thing. They were so anti-science, which was so ironic for such a scientific site. They have a science advisor. You know, they do scientific articles. I mean, that I wanted to cancel my subscription. And then they were like, well, too bad you paid for your, you know, 1 year and we're not refunding it. So I was like, okay, noted. Good customer service there, noted. So this last week, that headline that I read to you about, you know, 449 people and that, Ars Technica mentioned that article. And the Ars Technica headline was, latest study on cell phones and cancer finds another weak association. That's kind of a wimpy headline. I mean, the original said intensive phone users at higher risk. One of the excerpts from that article, so intensive phone users at higher risk, and the punchline was that intensive use was 15 hours per month. 15 hours a month, 30 days in a month, that's a half an hour a day. And for that, you got a cancer risk that was two or three times higher. That's only a half an hour a day, two or three times the cancer risk, just from cell phones. This is red flag stuff. So, went into the comment section, and it's loony time in the comment section. All the comments, every single one, is saying the article's nonsense, and coming up with cliched or unscientific thoughts on the subject. So I weighed in. And what I did was I took like six different people's points and I counterpointed them. And I posted that. Immediately, it was a matter of like 1 or 2 minutes, I got a down mod. Someone voted down my comment. Now, when you do a thorough rebut like that, you know, the down mod is for stuff that's trash, right? Stuff that's blatantly wrong, right? If I made six different points to six different people, how is it blatantly wrong? You know, the point is no one immediately answered me, and they just started down-modding me. And it became kind of comical. I refused to be, upset about it. And I even, sort of did some further follow-up replies to other people's replies and commented on my own, down-mods. Well, eventually, I think I did 4 or 5 posts. Eventually, every single post received nothing but down-mods. Not one single up-mod. And we're talking, one of them had at least 20 down-mods, and it was common for them to have 10 down-mods. Here's the thing. How can that be? How can it be only one-sided like that? Here's the answer. Conspiracy. That's the answer. That's the answer. And a badly designed comment system that tolerates conspirators. A conspiracy is just two or more people working together to force a result. Well, it was a bunch of people. At least 10, it was obvious it was at least 10. And just by voting, you can only vote once. So 20 down mods, that's 20 people. 20 people all on one side, 0 on the other. So what was interesting was one guy weighed in and, long story short, this guy started challenging my equipment. Hang on, Pete. I'll put up with a lot, but I won't put up with someone attacking my acoustometer. The acoustometer is a very primo piece of equipment. I come from an equipment background, a technical background. My father set up the instrumentation department at the British Columbia Institute of Technology. He ran that department. He taught me instruments from the youngest age. I was helping him add up the grades on papers when I was 10. I know meters because there's a science behind meters. There's a science behind how do you zero them? What are the accuracies of a meter? In this case of the acoustometer, what is it actually measuring? Some cheap meters, and I've commented on Amazon about it. Some cheap meters, they just sort of measure electrical stuff in general. They lump it all together and they're useless. Don't buy the cheap ones. Some are analog meters. They just have a needle that swings back and forth. They're not accurate. A needle that swings back and forth can give you a range about a factor of 100. My meter has given me readings of a range of 1,000,000, because it's digital. Anyway, this guy, to me, he was the guy, the second tier guy. You know, the primary tier guy is lying in the comments. And then you had the secondary guy who was like, if you had any major problems, he was the guy that got called in. And he'd bring out the heavy guns. You know, he'd attack you in the heavy gun way. And so he attacked my meter and it attacked in, very sort of heavy gun kind of way. Like, how do I know that you zeroed your meter and all this rubbish? Of course, the bottom line for me is we made the microwave changes and we are now sleeping like logs. We sleep so good. I wake up, I have so much energy. Here I am, 3:30, I'm just bombing along here. It's 4:28 a.m. I could go for a jog. I feel great. So, everything I've done has been based on my meter. Everything. I gathered some information from the internet, but the meter and the internet are in agreement. So, what I did with this one guy, the heavy gun, it's kind of like he called me a racist. That's what he was doing. How do you fight that, right? So I replied back, I just said one word. I said, hilarious. I thought his post, and I still think it is hilarious. I think that's the best thing I could have said. It was hilarious what he did. The level that they were going to go to downplay an article, to lie and be stupid in the comments, and to attack anyone that was supporting the article. What they were prepared to do was horrific, because this is humans we're talking about here, and bees, and apparently even butterflies. Wild bees and butterflies are now being affected. Oh, and they think it's, you know, sprays, pesticides. You know, here's the thing. Pesticides don't reach everywhere. The amount of arable land is small. The amount of land where you can grow something on is small. But bees are dying everywhere. Think about it. Microwaves go everywhere quite easily. You know that little road when you drive through the beautiful park and you're 50 miles from a city? I don't know if you notice the cell towers. Now, of course, I notice them. You got a nice, crisp, clear cell phone signal going through there. And it depends on your provider. Maybe it's not crisp and clear, but you have a cell phone signal. Microwaves are everywhere, baby. Anyway, 7.1 billion active. Let's celebrate. Everyone's got their cell phone. Everyone's got their little killer box in their pocket. And so when I replied to this guy with hilarious, that reply got moderated as a troll. Now, here's the thing. No other comment in the forum, there was about 60 eventually comments, no other comment got any down mods. I only got down mods. And when I replied with hilarious, which, let's say on Slashdot, if I replied with hilarious, you know, people would say that was, they would give you a mod like off topic, that's probably most likely, maybe redundant. Or they would just say it's overrated and they would mod you down without putting a label on it. And that's all fine. I don't have any problem with that. Well, Ars Technica proceeded to ban me from their forums for one day. I guess that's the first level. And they banned me for one day. And then they said, you know, if you don't like this, you can click here and you can contact us about it. So I clicked there and I contacted them about it. And I said, basically, I'm ashamed of you guys. And what's going on here? You know, what's the reason? No reply. Never been a reply. Days have gone by. They've never replied. Anyway, the ban is lifted a day later. So I thought, okay, let's go back to the actual comment that got marked as troll. And by the way, when they marked it as troll, it became invisible. And I don't care about that comment. I only had one word in it. There wasn't a big loss. But I thought, I will reply to that invisible comment, thereby making it visible. It actually, even when you reply, it stays invisible. So, of course, it was only one word. So I just repeated my one word and explained to people that I had said, you know, hilarious, and got banned, marked as troll, contacted ours, got no reply. And so then I said to the world at large, which is to say myself and 20 trolls, I said, what's going on here? Can someone explain? And by the way, ours has a link, another link, when they mod you down as a troll, they have a link which says, here's our guidelines. And they had an article on it, a recent article on it, and they toughened up on things. And the bottom line of being marked a troll is that you were attacking someone. Was I attacking anyone? The interesting thing, if you read the thread, and eventually I'm going to have this, the links that you can click on and you can read the whole thread, unless they, of course, edit it, which wouldn't surprise me. You'll be able to read it through my Floydcast pages when I get organized. The only one being attacked was myself. Some of the things they said, some of the words they used, I even commented on that and said, you know, if anything, you're being the troll here. What I said was, you're not seriously engaging me in conversation, so I'm going to ignore you. But I got marked as troll. Now, what's the whole point of all that? Why did that happen? Ars Technica reviews cell phones. I've got an RSS feed from Ars Technica, which means every time they have a new article, I get notice of it. They review cell phones all the time. Detailed reviews, tablets, all that kind of stuff. Well, do you think they maybe have to not be talking too much about microwave radiation if they're reviewing all these cell phones? Do you think they kind of have to be a little bit in bed with the cell phone companies? I think they have to be at least a little bit in bed with those companies. They have to either turn a blind eye or something else. So me in the comments saying, hey, cell phones are bad, what does that potentially do? All these reviews they do of cell phones, they want to make money from that. The companies that get reviewed, they want to sell cell phones. They both stand to gain from cell phone sales. Talking about radiation will cut into cell phones. And I don't pull any punches in my talk about cell phones. I know what I'm talking about. I know what the influences are. I'm exact about it, as exact as I can be with the information I have. And I think I have enough information. I don't have all the information. I think I have enough to reach a conclusion. I've reached conclusions about them. Others have too, and you know, there's not a difference. So this is, I mean, you know, you can choose your word. Words that come to my mind are, you know, the Gestapo, World War II, fascism, dictatorship, censorship, conspiracy. All these words come to my mind. Lack of fairness. And of course, what's the point? What's the point of leaving comments in that forum if they're like that? Well, what was really interesting was no one joined my side. And in fact, no one joined the other side. And the thread died. At the point where they banned me, what was really interesting was the thread died. No other comments were left. Let's review that. You have an article that's trying to downplay cancer. You do your little thing, you make your little silly comments in the comments section where you make fun of it. Ha ha ha, such stupidity. These people who think there's, you know, they cause cancer, it's stupid. One guy comes along, you carpet bomb him, you bomb him to death and you ban him. And then you literally go, that's it. And you guys all move on. You move on to the next forum, the next issue that you have to carpet bomb people on. The mercenaries came in, they fought their war, and they left. This actually happened. This happened last week. Very interesting. Not at all surprising. 100% to do with microwave radiation and cell phones, wireless Wi-Fi, and harm, cancers. So, that's my little preamble, my little intro. Oh, dear. I love that kind of stuff. Oh, and of course, at one point, one of them, there's so many little tricks they use that are becoming standardized. You start to see the pattern. But one of them is, you know, you give them a link to something informative. And then they go there, and then they, well, supposedly they go there. And then they have like a standard reply, like, yeah, I went there, and it was like, I could hardly read it, and couldn't get through it. It was so badly written, or there were so many errors in it, I couldn't, you know, blah, blah, blah. What's the bottom line of all that? They don't want to read it. They don't have time to read it. They don't have an interest in reading it. They want to alter the truth. They don't want to learn the truth. And they don't want to give you, you know, hits or whatever, if that's what they're worried about. Because, you know, YouTubes get viewed, right? And when they get viewed, the views go up. And the bottom line for many people is, how many views has something had? The more views it's had, the more worthwhile it must be, right? I mean, Gundam style, you know, at last time I looked, had over 1 billion views. People know this. People know Gundam style just because it's popular. So these guys have, well, you know, one of their roles is to not popularize you, to not give you the views. It's really important. So then they have to come up with the lie so they don't watch your video. And that's fine. But then, of course, they're uninformed. So then they have to come up with, you know, lies to handle that. Hey, you know, it gets complicated when you start lying. Hang on, Pete. So anyway, as part of all that, they sort of implied that my site had conspiracy stuff on it. You know, the conspiracies were hot and heavy or too thick or whatever. Well, they were a conspiracy. They were, without a doubt. You could just do like a statistical analysis of what happened and what went on, and you would say the odds of that happening by chance were 1 in a trillion. You know, that's significant. You know, the pot calling the kettle black. The conspirators calling the researcher a conspiracy nut. The point is, we have to be comfortable seeing the conspiracies in life. We have to be comfortable talking about it. And when we get that label, we have to say, you know, all that matters is it a conspiracy or not? If it is a conspiracy, I'm quite comfortable with that. I talked about that with my fluoride. Fluoride is one of the largest conspiracies. It's not necessarily the largest one, but it's certainly being propagated on a lot of people. Speaking of my new article, speaking of toxic, it's coming along. I am close to turning it into a video, turning it into audio that you can play in your car and listen to more than once. I know I'm the only one doing that. You know, in a world of liars, where most things are a lie, the news is lies. And what do I mean by lies? Lies are, you know, they're untruths. They're not telling you the truth. When you look at these stories, oh, you know, there's some semblance of a fact somewhere that starts the story. But then they have a spin. They have an angle. they have a way of filming, and they choose what they show you. And all of those things is the lie, because it's furthering their agendas. You know, when you have a world that's nothing but that, it's kind of soothing to have the opposite of that, to have just truth. And truth, you know, is defined as the best I can research using all of my mental faculties, using every keyword search I can think of, watching, listening to people talking, processing things. Do things add up, or is there differences of opinion? You know, if you talk about copper bracelets, I'm not going to support that. I think copper is a trace element, like so many other traces. And if you look at your multivitamin, that tells you how much copper you need. And if you take a multivitamin, you're getting your copper. So I don't consider myself a quack. But conspiracy, that's part of thinking. If you're thinking, you're aware of conspiracies. If you're not thinking, if you're afraid of others labeling you, well, maybe you don't see conspiracies, you know. It's like the guy holds up three fingers and you say five. You know, you've so edited yourself that you won't allow the word conspiracy into your mind. It's poison to you. It's like the word racist, right? You know, the word racist is a very effective label. I just think it's ironic, that whole subject of the racist subject. You know, we have rules which say it has to be a level playing field. I'm fine with that. Absolutely. It's a level playing field. Why do we have to have a continuing campaign to propagandize to us? Why are some groups favored over others when it comes to hiring? Favored over others. Not just given equal treatment, but favored over other people. What's going on there? This is true at universities, admissions to universities. Some groups are favored over others. What's going on there? There's something not good going on there. There's something not right. This isn't about equality. This is about a group with an agenda taking advantage of one thing and making something else happen. That's what it is. It's like the women's lib. I'm all for equality. I like a range of opinions. I love running into new people with new thoughts, whether they have the opposite gender to mine. No matter what country they're from, I love running into new stuff. So if Women's Lib brought more women into more fields and they have brought more new thoughts, that's fantastic. I'm all for it. But economically, that wasn't the... economics, right? Follow the money. Economically, that wasn't what was happening at all. It took a friend of mine to point it out to me that it was all about tax money. And look at where we are today. People are much weaker today after Women's Lib than before. Why? Before, one guy could work. The woman stayed home. Yes, that was the stereotype. It wasn't fair. I'm not saying it was. But the point is, one income could support a whole family. In my dad's case, one income supported seven people, five kids. One income, absolutely. Enough that he could travel even. And we had a great life. I'm very appreciative. Today, that can't happen. Today, it's you have to multiply by two. You need two incomes. But here's the thing. They want us to be weak. For them to be strong, we have to be weak. Because they have a zero-sum game. They win at our cost. The people that control us, everything they win at, it's because they've stolen it from us. So, by forcing both parents to work, by forcing every adult to work, you know, they're milking more cows. And the cows are weaker because you don't have the family unit. You don't have the mom or the dad. I don't care. I don't care if the dad stays home and the mom works. I'm fine with that. Stay at home dad, I've been that. I have no problem with that at all. I like it. I'm a care provider. Hey, if I'm a care provider, I can care for kids at home, and I've done it. I love shopping. I love cleaning. I don't have any problem with those activities. They're healthy. I call it exercise. In this day and age where you sit at a computer all day or watch too much TV, it's great to have an excuse for exercise. I love it. But when you force both parties to work, and yeah, force. How did they force it? They brought up the Women's Lib issue. They made it a fight, a battle. We will overcome. And the media helps, right? The media always prints the one story where someone is still being treated unfairly, right? Those stories will never go away. There will always be the one person being treated unfairly. So they have an infinite supply of stories to further their agenda. It's the same with cell phone. So everything I just said, all that last bit of verbiage is to say, be comfortable when you see a conspiracy. Be comfortable calling it a conspiracy. Let that settle in. That's you thinking. That's you being clear-headed. That's you rising above the mass, the media, the trolls, the people systematically attacking goodness. Because, you know, what I'm trying to do with microwaves is good. Absolutely. There's no misinformation in what I'm sending out. It's the opposite. And it's about a global threat to humanity. I don't have any doubt about this whatsoever. As bad as I thought fluoride was all these years, there's something worse, without a doubt. They must be so happy. And they're getting us to buy the cell phones. Us to pay for our monthly cell phone bills. Us to upgrade so that we can have a hotspot. You know, hotspot, it's where you can produce a wireless access point from a computer or from a laptop so that, you know, the idea is that one device can give another device internet access. So let's say your cell phone could provide a hotspot for your laptop, for example. Well, when you do that, your radiation levels are now, they're pegging the meter. The meter's going all the way to the right. It's a whole heck of a lot worse. The blizzard of Wi-Fi products, wireless products, the number of stories, the number of absurd things that they're coming out with. I mean, I just saw one, it's a wireless clock. You know, a Wi-Fi clock, a smart clock. What do you need that for? This one was so you could stream music. What are you streaming the music for from your clock? You're not doing it to listen to quality music. No, that's meant to be by your bed. And you stream music so it'll soothingly help you go to sleep, right? And it's being done with wireless radiation, which will not help you sleep. It will make it so you can't sleep, or it's harder to sleep. They know this. This is not unknown. This is not new information. It's pretty horrific. Anyway, so my talks, I don't think I talked about it too much, but basically I'm getting close, and I've got a few things to add. I want to try and round it out so that it reads. It's kind of research heavy, so now I want to give it some stuff in there that when I read it into the microphone type thing, it's worth listening to. You know, reading a bunch of numbers, not worth listening to. I'm pleased with it. I like what I've done, and just got a, you know, final finishing touches. It has been a bit of a project, creating that file. 10,000 words. It's not small. And it's one of my bigger articles. I think it's the third biggest thing that I've written with my 222 answers to the list of unsolved problems in physics, COSALT 6, that one being the biggest. And my writing about hand logging with my father, that was like the second biggest. And this is right close to that one. Maybe when I finish, it'll be about the same. I'm really proud of it. So, I did want to comment about last Sunday was Mother's Day. Everyone was wearing pink, right? Support the search for a cure. That's the current phrase, the search for a cure. Well, as a friend of mine pointed out decades ago, they first started talking about wanting to cure cancer. Then they talked about wanting to research cancer. And then they sort of toned it down, and they keep changing the message. They don't want a cure. And so the search for a cure has nothing to do with the cure. You can search for the answer, and then what do you do when you get the answer? You can throw the answer away. With wireless, right? And B's colony collapse disorder, they find out that cell phones absolutely cause it. You can take your cordless deck phone, put it near a beehive, and the bees don't come back, period. This is known, tested. Well, they found that out. That's the cure. Anyone talking about that? So, this Mother's Day, wear pink for cancer. Crap. I'm sorry, but they don't want a cure for cancer. They are creating cancer. They create it with cigarettes. They create it with alcohol, because alcohol is a poison, wears you down. They create it with wireless. They create it with fluoride, eating meat. You know, seriously, the cancer food. And, you know, look at all the stuff on bacon these days. It's become almost like a fetish. It's like a type of porn. Bacon as porn. But you know what it's like? It's like cigars. You know, in movies, you still see cigars. You still see people smoking them and making it seem like it's a good thing. There is nothing on earth more foul than a cigar. You know, when I was a kid, when I was in junior high, I smoked a bit. I even smoked a few cigars. I smoked the thinnest ones you could get. Colt, I seem to remember it. Maybe that's a Canadian brand. Thin. They were rum-flavored and wine-dipped. I wonder if I have that mixed up. Wine-flavored and rum-dipped. It doesn't matter. You know, someone pointed out, you know, with some of the worst things like drinking and smoking, have you ever noticed how much gold and how much sparkle, how much slick marketing goes into those products? You know, when you got cancer sticks, you got to make them look pretty good. You need some foil. You need some gold foil or some silver foil. Ah, dear. So, Mother's Day, wearing pink. What's the theme for Father's Day? Here's a quick little pop quiz. What are the products sold for Father's Day? I don't mean the, oh, here's a pair of slippers to add to your other six pairs. I mean, what's the theme, right? What do the NFL players wear on Father's Day? What does any sports team wear on Father's Day? Why is it only mothers that get a special day? I'm not jealous. Not at all. I think it's such an absurd thing. I'm glad that Father's Day is the way it is. I just think that Mother's Day is just like a, it's like a, you know, like a hideous movie. It's like a freak show. Everyone wearing pink is a freak show. Now, if ladies want to wear pink, I think it's great. I think it's beautiful. I like pink. I think it being inserted into places where it doesn't make sense, I think that's, you know, that's an agenda talking. And it's creepy. So, my cynicism reaches a high point on days like Mother's Day with people wearing pink. And it also reaches a high point the week where the NFL players for a week are wearing pink on all the games. It's hard to take football players seriously when they have pink knee pads, pink mouth guard, pink towel. I'm not mocking, you know, people's sexual preferences or anything else. No, not at all. It's just, it's such a bad marketing idea. But they will drip, drip, drip it on us until we all accept it. All of us. It will be the new norm, and then they will move to the next stage. Beats. I was kind of thinking when I was getting ready to give this Floydcast. And by the way, it is Floydcast number 14, which 1 plus 4 is 5. 5 is the conspirator, the fight for the underdog. So maybe this should truly be the Conspiracast. So one of the things I wanted to talk about in that vein, you know, when you go to Google and you start typing in a search, how it starts to give you suggestions, you type in G-R-A-V-I, gravy, and it'll come up with gravity, right? It'll come up with gravity, but it'll come up with the movie Gravity and various, you know, gravity-related hits. I think there's something potentially really evil in that. Here's a couple of things to consider. First of all, it's preying on people. It's preying on people that don't know how to type. People that don't know how to type, they're going to type a few letters and they're going to start hunting, right? They're going to hunt through what's presented to them. So you can present whatever you want. Well, you know, it used to be that, like AltaVista in search engines, AltaVista, the first great search engine, it just indexed the internet. It was fair. I could find my site in AltaVista. If I typed in baby names, I could find my site. Now with Google, I cannot find my site if I type in baby names. I can go to hundreds of links and my site will not be there. Which is ironic considering it's the biggest. I wonder what's going on there. Oh yeah, AdWords. Google wants to sell you AdWords. They want you to pay for play, as they say. So they will not send people to your site, even though it's a natural source, because they're not making money from you. Luckily, you can type super baby names. And you have a better chance of finding my site. It's probably still on page 2. Now that I've talked about it, it'll move to page 6. So, suggestions. Okay, you know, if you go to like a website like IMDb, the International Movie Database, IMDb is a good site, by and large, for information about movies. They have a truly large database of information about a truly large number of movies. And when I go there and I start typing in Gravity, I want them to come up with the movie Gravity, right? That makes total sense. IMDb, if you want to see how to do the suggestion process right, IMDb does a good job. They're not perfect. Sometimes you have to click on the very bottom where it says search for, you know, whatever you've typed in. Sadly, some of the really good documentaries don't come up when you type the first 5 or 10 letters of their names. You know, they're not important, right? They have 33 people that have watched it or have rated it on IMDb. It's just too small, right? That's okay. But Google is meant to, you know, index everything and make everything available. Forces are conspiring to reduce what's available to us carefully, gradually, get us back on the white bread. That's the goal. Wonder Bread. Wonder Bread was a company that advertised a lot when I was a kid. I'm not picking on them. There's lots of white bread companies. But still, it's just sort of ironic when you think of the phrase Wonder Bread. For us as a family, it was a wonder that anyone wanted to eat that bread. It was an absolute wonder. For me, it was horror bread. I still just have a, like, almost like a scar level image in my mind of Wonder Bread, of white bread. And people eating white bread and white bread sandwiches, you would see them everywhere. And I grew up in an age of where people had sandwiches. I didn't go to restaurants at lunch, waste their money. They had a sandwich. And it was white bread. You betcha. Well, they're getting us back on the white bread with search. By helping us. You can filter, and Google does filter. If you start typing in breast, Google won't show you the prompts. I may have the word wrong. Maybe they'll show them for breast, but not for tit. And I'm not trying to be crude here, but what I'm trying to say is that Google will censor the results they show you. And there's good reasoning behind it in this case. If you have a child and they type in, you know, breast or TIT, then maybe something of what would come up would be not suitable for them according to some families, according to some parents, right? And so by not giving those helpful suggestions, and Google also has a safe mode. Google allows you to either, you know, not have it filtered, the results, or to have them filtered. I think now the default is moving towards being filtered results so that, again, TITs will not come back, but maybe breast cancer information will come back. And I think we all are fine with that, right? Well, the point is that Google is filtering what comes back already. It's not a question. This isn't a conspiracy. This is a known fact. Well, when you start typing, Google can only fit in 5 or 10 things, right? How do they choose those 5 or 10 things? And the interesting thing is Google is still more fair than Ars Technica forums, by the way. Like if you type in microwave radiation or if you type in microwaves cancer, you know, Google will give you links that are informative. You'll go to sites and you'll learn stuff and it's good. Currently, this is May 2014. It doesn't have to remain that way. For some reason, and that's in very large quote marks, you can see me raising my hands and going, reason, in a Dr. Evil sort of way. They can just stop being helpful. They can just stop being neutral and helpful whenever they want on any subject. And they're not going to have a press conference about it. They're not going to tell you. They'll just stop prompting on it. I was talking with a younger person and talking about, you know, videos, and we've talked a little bit about various people who have a channel on YouTube. And what I sort of noticed a pattern was that this person was always talking about some of the most popular people on YouTube. And that was sort of their criteria of whether this person had something to offer, was that they were popular. And I tried to tell them that that's the definition of them not having a value. If you are the most popular person on YouTube, you have no value to anyone or to life. You're leading the train. You're in the front of the lemmings pack. Come on, lemmings. The cliff is just ahead. Let's jump. All the lemmings jump. They just keep running. It's all over pretty quick. So just think twice when Google is suggesting stuff to you. Don't be lazy. Similarly, when you get a result back from Google, don't just settle for that first query. Let's say you have a 3-word query. If you put a plus next to one of those words, you're saying, I really want this word in the results. Cell phone cancer. Put the plus in front of the word cancer. And then you will get, for sure, cancer results to do with cell phones. If you just type in cell phone, you know, radiation or cell phone risks, Google's going to send what they want to send to you. they can't possibly be on the same page as you, no matter how intuitive they seem to be. And, you know, Google has been an interesting company to watch. I'm not necessarily pro or con on Google. But these helpful prompts are appearing everywhere. Everyone's doing it. So I was going to suggest practice not choosing the prompted choices. Now, if you go to IMDb, it's a great time to choose the prompted choice. Wikipedia. Wikipedia is a great time to choose the prompted choice because you probably know what you're looking for. When you type in Tom Cruise, you probably want the first choice that Wikipedia gives you, right? But who types in Tom Cruise on Google anymore? In other words, you type in Tom Cruise Scientology, Tom Cruise Short People, Tom Cruise Mission Impossible. You type in something else. And don't just settle for the something else that Google tells you. Tom Cruise is beautiful. Don't choose whatever Google is prompting you. Now, if Google finishes typing, you start typing in supercalifragilistic, and you pause, and Google comes up with the full long word. That's a good one to click on. And even if it doesn't give you the results you want, after you click on it, you now have that word in your search bar, and you can add another word in front of it, Dick Van Dyke, Mary Poppins, you know, you can play around. And you've got that big word that you didn't have to type. It's not that it has no value. It's that you have to be careful. It's a two-edged sword. A little bit of good news. Subway, the sub sandwich people, they have started adding vitamin D and calcium to bread. This is surprisingly significant. Vitamin D has been an underappreciated vitamin. Has been for decades. It slipped under my radar. I have for years not taken enough and suffered from it. Multivitamins and vitamin companies are adapting, and they're starting to offer larger quantities of vitamin D. Believe it or not, in some countries they regulate the vitamin D, so they are not allowed to sell large dose vitamin D. I think Canada is one of those places, believe it or not. Why would they do that? Isn't that amazing? It is. It's amazing. That's government going too far. And the irony is that vitamin A is everywhere. Vitamin A and D are similar. They're oil soluble, they stay in your body. They can be a problem because they accumulate. So whatever you do to one, you should do to the other. Vitamin A is everywhere. It's in cheeses, it is in butter, it is in milk, it is in countless foods. It's hard to avoid vitamin A, trust me. I accumulated too much vitamin A at some point in my not too distant past, and I had to avoid it. I had to use up my internal supply, and it was hard. I had a mono diet for years to get rid of the vitamin A that had accumulated in my body. Because everyone is so helpfully giving you 100% of your daily requirement. You know, in breakfast cereals, it's helpful to get B vitamins. Because processed cereals, cereal grains, have had the B vitamins removed. So you need them added back in. Absolutely, that's helpful, that's good. And B vitamins are water soluble, like vitamin C. They wash away. If your body eats too much, it just excretes the excess away. So you need B vitamins daily. So B vitamins in cereal, good. Thumbs up. Kind of pathetic that you need to add them. I'd recommend a whole grain cereal, then you don't need it. But good thing. Vitamin A, adding to stuff, bad. It accumulates. You're not controlling the dose. And when you helpfully put 100% of the vitamin A in most multivitamins have 100% of the vitamin A in them, then any vitamin A you take from anywhere else is more than you need, and you are now systematically accumulating vitamin A in your body. This is not good. So, sadly, our society gives us too much vitamin A and not enough vitamin D historically. And just recently, one of those few promising little tidbits, I'm here to say that in May 2014, Subway is adding vitamin D to bread. I think Subway is one of the great fast food places. You know, if I had to have sponsors, and I don't have them, and I don't want them, you don't want them. But obviously in coffee, I love Pete's, and I, you know, it's dear to my heart. I can't stop being nice to Pete's because Pete's has been nice to me. Well, Subway's been nice to me. As a vegetarian, you can go to Sub Shop and you can get your custom vegetarian sub sandwich. It's cheap, it's quick, it's healthy. If you want your hot slices of peppers, hot peppers on there, you can have them. If you like green peppers, you can have them. If you don't like them, you can leave them off. You can have lettuce or not have lettuce, you know. It's a quick, customized, healthy sandwich. You can have a light sandwich. In other words, you don't have to eat heavy meat and heavy proteins. Sub sandwiches digest fantastically well. If I could afford them, I'd eat them daily. I think they're awesome. They are a great solution. Subway is one of the largest restaurant chains, arguably the largest in the world. It has hundreds of thousands of locations, I believe. I'm just going by memory. It's definitely up there. It's one of the biggest, if not the biggest. You know, good reason. So, hats off to Subway. My list of non-advertising advertisers is Pete's, Subway, and of course Costco. Those are three entities that I am confident and comfortable in singing the praises of. Unpaid praises of. It was funny, I read an article last week. This didn't even make my Floydcast notes, but it was a page trying to say, you know, Costco's not always a good deal. And so you're like, whoa, really? And so you go there, and bottom line, very disappointing article. No, they didn't shatter any myths. They just didn't have much to offer. There wasn't, you know, it was kind of a come on. But they were saying, like, one of the most, you know, questionable things was they were saying that Costco toilet paper wasn't the best deal, and it was, you know, of questionable quality. Well, you know, I'm here to say that I know what I'm talking about with toilet paper. I'm a toilet paper expert. We all are, of course. I'm kidding. But one of the things with toilet paper is the soft scam. Toilet paper used to be miserable. I mean, it used to be literally newspaper. And then it was newspaper-like. And when you'd go to public bathrooms, you know, for decades, you were stuck with newspaper-like, horrible, drink coaster-sized pieces of paper, pressed paper. And that was horrible, and that was not fun to wipe your butt with. And so, you know, in the home market first, they started coming out with softer toilet paper. And it had the good property that it would break apart quickly. It would be less inclined to plug your toilet and less inclined to plug like a septic field because it would break apart. And the property that made it break apart was that they had shorter fibers, more processed fibers. And that also made it softer. So it would break apart and it was softer. Now, seemingly that was like the holy grail for toilet paper. Well, the problem, and I've run into this and I've gotten fed up with it, it's happened many times with many brands, is that there's plenty of toilet paper that doesn't work as toilet paper. You go to use it, and now it has a hole in it, and you haven't finished using it. Costco? Never. I mean, when I say never, not one in a thousand times does that happen. Yet, Costco paper is not too abrasive for me. Costco toilet paper is the first toilet paper that I don't have a complaint about it. I don't wish it was a little bit softer. I don't wish it was a little bit harder. It doesn't break apart too readily. I don't have to wait for it to be on sale. Costco, you know, has a number of their own brands where they give you a coupon periodically. They never do it on toilet paper. You know, it's just one of those things they've got to figure out. They got a nice low price, and that's that. It is a solved problem, truly. It's kind of like the oil changes. People used to do their own oil changes. And now, oil changes are a solved problem. You can drive to Oil Can Henry's or various places, Jiffy Lube, Minute Lube, Minute Tune. Remind me to talk about those three because those are probably Canadian ones, but all three of those mathematically are very similar and very profitable combinations. Isn't it interesting that they all are successful despite the competition and at the expense of everybody else? Isn't that, you know, an interesting coincidence? Not a coincidence, not by my theory. Anyway, but oil changes are a solved problem. We don't have to sweat it. We don't have to find a mechanic who can do a good oil change. We get good oil changes while we get a free cup of coffee in a newspaper while some guys call out, hey, I just want to let you know one of your belts is loose. You should change it soon. Yeah, okay, go ahead with that. All for 20 or 30 bucks. Solved problem. Awesome stuff. Well, same with toilet paper. And so it turned out, from my memory anyway, about the only thing they were saying that at Costco wasn't a good value was toilet paper, and it was like, okay, that's going too far. That's like saying, I went to Pete's and I liked most of their coffees, but I didn't like House Blend. Nobody messes with Pete's House Blend, and no one messes with Costco toilet paper. Toilet paper is to Costco as the crawler is to the NASA space program. You need the crawler. The crawler carries those big rockets. It's the only one of its kind, or there's two of them, but they're the only two of their kind in the world. They are awesome beasts, and they get the job done. Costco TP gets the job done. Anyway, hats off to Subway for adding vitamin D to bread. For every 100 bad stories, there's one good one. I'll take it. All right, I'm going to give you some updates. Regarding the basketball team that had the 527, the accident looking for a place to happen, and they had the owner, 775, accident looking for a place to happen, and all that stuff, and then the coach was born with an accident looking for a place to happen, first name, and then the commissioner of the league has an accident looking for a place to happen, total. The wife of the man at the center of the storm, Shelley Sterling, she wants to run the team. The interesting thing is that her name, in its own way, in my opinion, is as bad as his name. Her name is 549, last name Sterling, 595, 145 total, 5 destiny. Okay, you don't want a 5 destiny. The Sterling last name, 595, you don't want 5 in your name at all. So this person, when you add it up for Shelley, she has, out of 6 positions, 6 prominent positions in her name, 4 of them have the 5 quality. She's got my pity. It's beyond empathy. Even in her first name, it's a 5 letter. The letter is like an extra influence. The vowel, I mean, is an extra influence, and her only vowel in her first name is a 5 vowel. 5 quality, bitter experiences. 5 in a name, it makes the person so intense, and they just can't shut off the turbine. And a turbine is great for a jet, but it's not good for a car. And life is a car. Car analogy is what life's all about. Because we're all bumping against each other and we're all driving everywhere. We rarely turbine anywhere. That 5 is just too intense, too restless, too little peace of mind. I have empathy for Shelley Sterling wanting to take over the team and justifiably upset by her husband's remarks. But good luck, and legally it seems like that's not going to happen. Anyway, recall my original prediction. I predicted this guy was going to get away with it. Well, he's already planning to not pay the fine, $2.5 million fine. And the league has not voted, the owners have not voted on this guy yet. Let's just see how that plays out. Okay, another update. There's an article that came out that says, what happens when a neurosurgeon removes your hippocampus? This guy had a bicycle accident. He started having epileptic fits, and as a way to deal with these fits, they gave the person a partial lobotomy. And then they ended up studying this guy, and he became this famous initialed subject that doctors and science medical types learned a lot from this guy, and what happens when you take out the hippocampus. Well, the guy passed away, and then they could say his name. Well, his name is Henry Gustav Molaison. Well, Henry is a 527. An accident looking for a place to happen. And his whole story, and the reason he's in this article, is because he had a bike accident, which was severe enough that he started having epileptic fits and then had to have that partial lobotomy. Very few people have a partial lobotomy, like basically no one, approximately no one. And then to be studied and to become a reference subject, sort of like a what not to do subject. I'm not trying to insult the guy. The guy is sort of a hapless, victim of his name. And there he was. I was reading this article, and there was the punchline at the end. Accident looking for a place to happen, name. Perfect, sadly. There was another story on May the 6th, 2014, this was covered on /.. And the story was, brain injury turns man into math genius. They start talking about this guy, and he's a math genius, yada yada. Well, it turns out that this guy has sort of tried to capitalize on this, or his handlers have tried to capitalize on this, and he's been in the news before. And /.ers are a pretty sharp bunch. And the very first comment on this story said, hey, this is what this guy does, this is how he makes a living or whatever. And so the guy got outed. And what was the guy's name? Jason. Accident looking for a place to happen. 775. Outed right away in the first reply. The math genius who's... Is that really special? A lot of math, quote, genius, quote, people are not. If not, maybe none of them are. you know, there are skills and principles behind math, and you can get good at math. When I was a kid, I was, you know, multiplying four-digit numbers times four-digit numbers and adding up, you know, basically unlimited lists of numbers. And you get good at doing a lot of that in your head without even practicing it. And if you start practicing it and learning the tricks, you can do phenomenal math things in your head. And it's not being a genius. It's just liking math, practicing it, learning the tricks. It's like a magician learning the tricks, right? Anyway, interesting he got outed. In a sense, an accident happened to him, right? When he was trying to capitalize on this yet another story. And on Slashdot anyway, the record skipped. Someone dragged the needle across the record because, you know, he's done this before. Thank you for playing. The accident combination like that, it doesn't get away with things. That Donald Sterling didn't get away with his remarks. He's now, is it a pariah? Anyway, again, I'm just featuring one or two, actually, combinations out of the 40, out of the 81, so 2.5% of the combinations that are out there. But they're really illustrative, and they're so, when stories about them come up, they're so freaky, which suits the news, right? The news wants freaky. You want freaky, you want accident, looking for a place to happen names. One last update. Michael Schumacher, Formula One race car driver. One of the winningest drivers ever. Phenomenal guy. Kind of modest. German in that background. What's his name? Michael 696. No accident there. Good name. Unless you call him Mike. It's a bad nickname. Don't do it. Michael. He always goes by Michael. Great first name. Schumacher. 999. Now that's the name of tragedies. Hudson. Hudson River. The Hudson River accident of that plane. Hudson is 999. You don't want that combination. My brother, I've talked about my younger sister, my only sister who's my younger sister. I have a younger brother. He likes going by a 999. And his name is normally a 977, but he likes the nickname, which is a 999. And I told him one day, I said, you know, out of the two names, you shouldn't go for the 999 one. It's a number of tragedies. And he was like, too bad, I like it. It's like, okay. A short while later, within a year, he had an accident. He's a skier. He was going skiing. His car left the road. He went down the embankment, and he got a scar over the entire top of his head, right from the back of his head over the top of his head, and right down through his eyebrow. And, you know, with all the stitching, the eyebrow isn't quite lined up afterwards. I don't know. I don't want that. I haven't had that. I've had, you know, close calls and lessons. I've had a balanced name for a long time, and even when I was born, I had a better than average name. We'll just leave it at that. And I'm grateful for that. It was by a fluke, but I'm grateful for it. You know, it's not hard to change your name. It's not expensive. Some countries, they make it illegal. Isn't that sweet? Some countries, I'm thinking of Catholic countries, if you look on your actual birth certificate, if you think your name is Wendell, it's not Wendell. It's a variation on Joseph. It could be Yosef and all sorts of other spellings. You are Joseph, my friend. Your name is Roger? No, it's Joseph Roger. Your name is Bob? No, it's Joseph Bob. For women, you think your name is Diane? No, it's Mary Diane and variations of Mary. You are born with a different name than you think you were given, and you have... If you're a guy, you have the influence of Joseph, and if you have a girl, you have the influence of Mary. Well, let me just say that the Joseph name is the opposite of being a guy. It's the opposite of balance. It's a very discordant name. And similarly, Mary is the opposite of being a woman. It's a masculinizing name, not a healthy name. It makes you basically bullheaded, close-minded, and, as I say, unfeminine. You know, the point about a balanced name is it lets you just be you. You don't want a name that pushes you in an unbalanced direction. Your birthday qualities. You can be a woman and have what would be considered a masculine quality in your birthday, and that's healthy. That's okay. It's meant to be there. You're meant to be that. I'm thinking of the one quality. You're meant to be one-ish. You know, the one-ish quality is the tomboy. The girl is a tomboy. She plays with the guy. She climbs trees. My mom was that way. My mom was a one, and is a one, in the birthday. She's meant to be that way. She's meant to climb trees when she was a kid. And she'd done so many positive, one-ish things. Thank goodness for Mom. She's been great. And feminine. My mom was, you know, kind of a looker when she was young. And like, you know, I've seen the wedding photo type thing. She has a beautiful smile and everything else. She can be feminine, beautiful, and one-ish, and climb trees. Just don't put the one in the name. It's not supposed to be there. And for a guy either. It's not a number of mind. It's not a number that's supposed to be in a name. Anyway, so some countries you don't have a choice. They force unbalanced names to be your first name. That's really hideous. On a par with the microwave ugliness and flirtation ugliness. For the same reasons. And in some countries you cannot change your name. Well, Germany is one of those countries. So Mr. Schumacher, despite his tragic last name, cannot change his last name. At best, you can sometimes change the spelling. As long as it still, you know, basically, I guess, sounds like Schumacher, you can throw in a letter or change a letter. Anyway, Mr. Schumacher, one of the winningest or the winningest, you know, Formula One drivers, had an accident skiing. He was just skiing, I think, with family. The next thing you know, he's in a coma. Well, sadly, he's still in a coma. He's been in a coma for months. He may recover, he may not. I've checked, you know, within the last week or two, and it's hard to say. I love Formula One. I love racing. The quality that likes racing is the 8 quality. The 8 quality is good at it. There are a lot of people that like to go fast. The 8 is good at racing. In other words, being truly fast and safe. Paul Newman? Paul Newman Racing? An 8 under an 8 in the birthday. I would say that's kind of a correspondence there. So, I'm an 8 in the birthday when you add up all my birthday numbers. In fact, I was an 8 under an 8. I love going fast. You know, legally fast. I've never, you know, been able to afford racetrack experience. I don't make a habit of going fast at any time. I drive, you know, typically with the flow of traffic and as safely as I can. But I love racing. The closest I ever came to it was driving a windy road. I'm thinking of one particular time where I was a salesman on the road, and in one of the towns I went to, you know, you'd stay in a hotel, right, a motel. And the motel I chose was out of town, and you had to drive along a windy road to get there. And so I would visit, you know, one of my clients, and then I would drive back on the windy road. That's the closest I came to racing or the feeling of racing. You know, so that's the equal. They love racing, and Formula One is the primo of racing. But sadly, Mr. Schumacher is going to leave this world, it appears, very much not the same as when he was a racing driver. He's lost out totally. Even if he lives, even if he recovers, realistically, it's probably going to take years. He may have to relearn stuff. I don't even think he's been revived yet. But apparently he's had moments, at least, where he was conscious. You know, medically induced coma, right? And it's horrific. Did this guy deserve it? I don't know all of the ins and outs of this guy. I'm not judging him, that's for sure. But nature, when you have that 999 name, nature says you either give everything all the time or you lose. That's it. And that's not balanced. And it's not a balanced name. And sadly, you know, he has a great first name, unbalanced last name, good destiny, good total. Which is why he was so successful. And the positive side, Schumacher, it's a specialist. And then Michael is an excellent mental number. So you could just see with Michael, I can just say what this guy was like. And of course, it's going to sound like he's a Formula One driver. But with Michael, he would have a fantastic memory. He could, you know, no matter how many times you changed the car, he would immediately learn and memorize all the new aspects of the car. That specialist 9, he would just specialize in whatever aspect of the car needed to be, you know, learned or mastered. This guy would just truly, you know, he probably could have written books on racing type thing. He could have been an expert color commentator, or, you know, he could have been so many things and given back in so many different ways. And now he's on a beep, 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 beep. He's on life support, basically. He's in a medically induced coma. Constant supervision, and he's having no life right now because of his name, believe it or not. All right, I'm going to get to Bad Driver of the Week, and then we'll call it. Bad Driver of the Week. I had some funny things happen, and this was kind of comical. I was helping someone move an item in my truck, big generator. I truly felt like I had a truck when I was carrying that generator. I felt like I'm a trucker carrying a load in my truck. Heavy, heavy generator. Anyway, I was coming back, and where the road situation was, my road loops around, and another road loops around. It's all near an interstate, and they merge together. Think of it like two fish hooks, and you put the fish hooks together. So imagine the long part of the fish hook, the two long parts are joined together. So think of it like a J and a reverse J joined together. So you come around the, think of the short part of the J, you do that sharp 180 degree turn, and then now you got to merge. And typically, because those lanes merge, you know, obviously most people are changing from one lane to another. And even though it was like the middle of the day, like 1 p.m. or two, I think it was 2 p.m., it wasn't rush hour. It was, you know, traffic was kind of backed up. And, you know, all it takes is one thing to affect a whole bunch of things, right? So in this merge lane area, one of the lanes was backed up. So that shouldn't have stopped, you know, the other lane, but it did, because someone got way down in the other lane, the left lane, and they needed then to get into the backed up right lane. Well, they didn't get in earlier where they had ample time, right? They got so far down. Well, what happens is people in the right lane want to get in the left lane. And when they get in the left lane, they clear up. That congested right lane gets less congested if you let them. Well, they couldn't get out of the right lane because this person had gone way down on the left lane, way down in the merge period. It's like closing one of the gates of the barn and telling the animals to get out. You know, they were all stepping on each other trying to get out type of thing. One lane was congested with animals, and the other lane, you close the door, and then you're like, get the animals out. And they're like, well, we got one door closed. And so that person was a bad driver. They had half a block or more, maybe a block, to merge already, and they didn't. And they didn't, you know, obviously anticipate what would happen if they just kept drifting along and like, I don't want to impose, I don't want to push my way in here. And they weren't aware, and weren't. The unintended side effect was then the people couldn't clear out of that lane. You know, so sadly, if that person had waited higher up in the merge sequence, at the start of the merge sequence, people would be clearing out in front of them. The right lane would be getting less congested, and all they would have to do is nip into one of those cleared out spots, and the traffic would have been humming along in one lane, and, you know, the whole thing wouldn't have happened. So it was just sort of not knowing the territory, not knowing the road, and being, no doubt, too nice. Not asserting. You know, there are times when you should assert yourself. It solves a problem. Classic example, you come to a stop sign. You know, you stop and then you go, right? And you get people that they're on the road where they don't have a stop sign, but they stop. And you're at the stop sign and you're like, well, now who goes, right? We're both stopped. In those situations, I always go. If I'm at the stop sign and they stopped and they don't have one, I'm like, you nincompoop, and I go. Assuming it's safe. Because the whole point is they don't know the road. They're not going to resolve the situation. I'm not going to wait for them to resolve it. Like, they've blown it. And someone has to resolve it. Someone has to assert. Now, admittedly, I don't probably always go, and you don't have to always go. Eventually, they'll figure it out, and they're like, oh, I didn't have to stop here. But some of them don't. You can truly be there a while, because they've now stopped for you, and they figure, like, it's your turn, and I'm waiting for you. They're no longer following the street signs. Drive like that. Don't do that, people. Oh, yeah. And further to that merging issue, I wanted to talk about in my regular driving, there's another spot in the area where I regularly have a two-lane merge situation. Same thing. Only this is at highway speed. The first one I just told you about was at about, I think the speed limit there is like 30 miles an hour, 40. I mean, you come around such tight corners, you're going 10 or 15. You know, it's not a speed issue. The other one, though, is exactly the same. Two lanes merging. Everyone wants to get in the other lane, or a lot of people want to. A ton want to merge onto the highway, and a whole bunch want to exit. It's a two-lane exit, to give you an idea, so it's a busy exit. And then there's a huge on-ramp, always congested with cars, just before that. So you have a saturated amount of cars coming in, and then you have a whole bunch of people wanting to exit via two lanes right after. It's a recipe for challenge, right? What's amazing is how poor so many drivers are. People that want to merge onto the highway frequently will go along too late. They won't synchronize their speed, find a spot, synchronize with the spot, and then just move over. That's just so simple and obvious they won't do it. And so they go along, they're at the wrong speed, so the cars are going by, they're like, oh, how am I going to do this? And then they get to a point, now they're in the exit lane, so there was a huge big merge ramp. They had their chance and they missed it. They're drifting along in the exit, now the exit lane, and then they park. They're like, okay, I gotta wait for a spot here. And of course, all the cars are bombing along on the highway and they can't get in. And now the whole system comes to a halt again. Only this is at highway speed. And that's not as funny. That's how bad things happen. Nincompoops cause bad things. Being too slow is just as bad as being too fast. Every bit as bad. Yeah, fascinating stuff. And you know that unenlightened self-interest too, right? You know, people come along, they just... You sort of see all types when it comes to that two-lane merge situation. So, learn how to do that. So it's not an issue. It shouldn't be an issue. It's not complicated. It's not even hard. It's common sense. Merge your speeds. Find a spot while you're merging. Once you got your merged spot, people will let you in. They know what you're doing. And then you do your lane change. And no one slows down, or they slow down much less. Problem solved. All right, that's my bad driver of the week. I want to talk about some movies. The rewatch of the week. None of these are rewatches, but they could be in the future. All right, I watched The Enemies of Reason. The Enemies of Reason is a Richard Dawkins TV series. I don't know if it's still on, or, you know, there was a number of episodes type thing. And it was kind of interesting, you know, most people would sort of sympathize with this guy. Either you're either religious or you sympathize with Richard Dawkins, you know, just to sort of simplify the whole thing. You know, he's scientific kind of thing. But as I watched it, I realized, you know, I have some fundamental disagreements with this guy. And I ended up leaving a comment on IMDb about The Enemies of Reason. There was only like 4 or 5 comments, and then I left mine, so it shouldn't be too hard to find it. But one of the things he talked about was dowsers, dowsing. Dowsing is where you know, it's the farmer with a switch, a branch in his hands, and he can measure where the water is, so he knows where to dig for his well. Dowsing's been around a while. Well, he thought, you know, come up with a simple test and get these dowsers in, and I'll make them look bad. Well, his simple test was, it was double blind, so that's good. In other words, the testers and the testees did not know which of the 6 choices had water in it. The other ones had sand, similar mass, but sand. And the one that had water had a 2-liter bottle of water. And of course, they did poorly. Well, the dowsing method they had was to use metal. I don't know if it has like a wood handle, if it just bent metal right into their hands. It's like the shish kebab forks, the tines you use to skewer food and put it on your barbecue. Like a long metal rod that can sort of somewhat freely turn in your hand. And, you know, the theory is it turns and the 2 tines cross, and that's how you know when you've gone over water type thing. Well, here are some of my complaints about that. Because I've seen, when I was in grade 12, my family moved to the country. And our neighbor was a farmer. His father was a farmer. His son was a farmer. And this was a guy, you know, he was a farmer all day long, all week long, all life long. He was an easygoing guy. He'd talk to you about anything. He gave me employment, partial employment in the summertime. Easy going, full of stories. Gave you the time of day at any time. He'd just stop what he was doing and start talking to you. What a great guy. His name was Elk. E-L-K. Yeah, like the animal. That was his actual first name. You could look it up on the phone book. My dad loved this guy. My dad, you know, very scientific guy and, you know, city guy and instrumentation department runner and stuff. But they got along great because they were both thinkers and both, you know, interesting people. Well, one day, our neighbor just showed us dowsing. He cut a branch from, or broke off a branch from one of our fruit trees, and you just make it into the shape of a Y. You hold on to the 2 parts of the Y very loosely. He showed us how loosely. And we had a stream right there. Our property was saturated with streams. We were like the hapless city folk that bought the lemon property that was full of underground streams that came up wherever they wanted to. Which, by the way, our address of our place was a 1. It reduced to a 1. And when you have a 1 address, you have water problems. Huh. Interesting coincidence, that. So, one of our streams, right where he would usually stop his truck and talk to us endlessly, there was a stream right there, and it was covered. We all knew where it was, and it had a covered part. Then it opened up, and that particular stream surrounded, you know, 2 sides of our property. So it wasn't like it was a mystery where it was. But he showed, just, again, lightly holding this switch, and he just walked towards and over this stream. And that switch became a living thing. That branch, you've never seen a branch do this. You've never, ever seen it. You know, think of it like, you know, as kids you torture bugs. Sadly, I did this, so I speak from experience. Well, let's say you have a spider, and let's say it's in its web, and you take it and you put it on the ground, and it wants to run, right? And let's say you sort of corner it a bit. Well, at that point, the spider now realizes it's got a problem, and it starts to sort of think. Let's put it that way. Well, this branch was like, I've been cut off from water, because we cut it off from the tree. It was living a minute ago. And, you know, you can plant a piece of wood, and it will grow. And not in all cases, but it will sometimes sprout roots, and it'll become a new tree. That's how a lot of planting is done. So this tree had become separated from the water, source of water. The tree is a source of water, constant source of water. And now, as we went over this stream, this branch was saying, I need water. Here's the exit. And it was pulling harder than you could imagine towards the water. Absolutely. My dad is scientific. I'm scientific. We were pretty impressed. And then he talked about it. He said that based on when it dips, and there's like two dips, and the second one tells you the flow rate. One of them tells you where it is, and the other one tells you the flow rate or something. And he just talked about this, you know, laconically. Just easygoing, matter of fact, if words just rolled off his tongue, never in a hurry. And it was routine. It was routine to douse as a way to find water, so that when you dug your well, you know, farms often had to have well water. You didn't want to have a hole put in the wrong spot. You doused, you found your water, you drilled your hole, and you found water. Well, you found flowing water. You found actual water. Alive water. So in this Dawkins, The Enemy's Reason documentary, this particular episode, the water wasn't living water, it wasn't flowing water, it was in a sealed container. It was dead water in a sealed container, number one. Number two, they weren't walking over it. In fact, one of the dowsers who, you know, failed like the rest of them said, I normally walk over the area. The test didn't allow that. You have to walk over the area. You have to walk past it, and you get a relative change. They were sort of somewhat trying to sort of swing the dowsing stuff over these. They were large paint pails with a 2-liter container underneath the paint pail, basically. You know, 5-gallon paint pail with a 2-liter inside of it. And it was cumbersome. So testing methodology was terrible. And then the type of dowsing equipment they used, they weren't using live switches from trees. They were using metal rods that crossed. Now, okay, some might have good success with that. It doesn't make sense to me. It does make sense to me that a living branch wants to find water. Those living branches, those branches that you cut off, if you plant them, they will grow again in many cases. They are alive. That's the only way they can be growing again. They were alive, you cut them off, it's like, you know, it's like taking a fish out of water, the fish wants to get back in the water, right? It makes sense. So they had the wrong type of dowsers, they had the wrong type of setup, they didn't have flowing water. What a surprise, they didn't get good results. Colored me shocked. Well, he had 3 or 4 other things like this in his series that finally I left my comment, and you can find it if you want. You know, I was honestly disappointed. I think Dawkins has had some good things to say about religion, that, you know, challenge religion. And I mean, it's preaching to the converted, right? Ironically, right? Religion is so polarizing that those who are not religious usually don't need to be convinced to stay not religious. And those who are religious usually don't need to be convinced to be religious. So it's sort of a dead subject, because no one's going to change. So that was a disappointing documentary that I watched. Speaking of disappointing movies that won Oscars last year, Dallas Buyers Club. You know, some movies Hollywood comes out with, they're so full of agendas. They're really just designed to torture us. Dallas Buyers Club is one of those. Oh yeah, based on a true story. They introduce us to a completely disgusting character who has major problems, drugs, ends up selling drugs. Spoiler alert, the Dallas Buyers Club is this guy selling drugs, and that's what the buyers are buying. But my question is, why watch it? There was nothing redeeming about that movie to me. Even though I like Matthew McConaughey, he knows his stuff, he's a great actor, he's full of energy, he prepared for it, he sacrificed for it, he put all kinds of effort into it. Horrible movie. Disappointing movie. Whereas, also based on a true story, Captain Phillips, last year. very unrecognized movie, but it has uplift. It has something good at the end. Tom Hanks was truly exceptional in Captain Phillips, just like Matthew McConaughey was, but the Captain Phillips character is someone that you can relate to. There's some uplift there. We can respect this character. And, you know, the bad guys use drugs instead of the good guys using drugs. Don't torture yourself with Dallas Buyers Club. Watch Captain Phillips. I have to say that that was one of the most impactful movies I've ever watched, just because of Tom Hanks' performance. Really and truly outstanding. Wow. The guy is, if anyone can call himself an actor, it's Tom Hanks. Really salute that guy. Alright, so that was my rewatch of the week. Go and rewatch Captain Phillips if you haven't seen it already. So this has been Floyd Maxwell, JustThinking.com, doing Floydcast number 14 for May 19, 2014. Good luck with your life. Take care.